Welcome back to the Mini PC Show, Big Talk, Little Machines. Today is April 13th, 2016. My name is Brian Thomas.
My name is Eric Ardini.
I'm Door-to-Door Geek from Podnos.com.
Guys, how are you today?
Happy to hear your voice. It's been now 2 weeks, and I know most of it was, I believe, work-related. I really hope your work appreciates the effort you put in.
You know, you and me both. I really hope so as well, too. But even though if they don't appreciate it, the pay is still good. So that's why they keep me around.
Well, that helps.
Yes, it does. I appreciate that. Thank you, Dor. Yeah, things have been pretty steady. Very busy. And I had to look at the calendar to see what day it was. And just things are going so fast and furious. It's almost summertime, if you think about it.
Yeah, it's officially we had our last snowfall of the year last Friday. It was a lot of snow. Luckily, the ground was warm, and summer's here, man. It's nice. I dragged my shed across the yard last week. Now I've got to worry about installing some conduit and running some electrical lines underground and some network cabling underground, and then also got to put up a fence. So then we can put up a pool, and then we'll have like 2 weeks left of summer, and we'll tear it all down and go hide for another winter.
Tell me you're running fiber, right? Multi-mode fiber. Got to run the fiber.
From my router.
I don't know. I've been playing with fiber for the past couple of years, and I'm just like, nothing but fiber for me.
So I'd have a LAN to fiber adapter in here, run fiber out to there, and then have a LAN fiber to LAN adapter out there.
Well, you could do that, or you can get a switch that has a NSFP port where you can plug in a multi-mode 850 optic. And then from that switch, you'll have your Cat5 jacks. Don't listen to me. I'm I don't want to have you spend any more money than you need to. So if copper will do just as good.
I only want to do it once, honestly. You know.
Right, right. No, I hear you. I hear you.
I think you need holographic cables just to be completely future proof. You know. Very cool. Yeah, I've been slightly busy the last 2 weeks, but busy is good as far as I'm concerned. I keep toying around with the idea of buying a second Odroid C2 because, to be quite honest, I am that happy with the device. I am literally ecstatic with the performance I'm getting out of the device. I want to hold off. I have next week. There's going to be no show. Me and Eric are both traveling to Portland area to take a 5-hour. Trip with a bunch of friends from Portland up to Bellingham, Washington for the Linux Fest Northwest. So I want to hold off on expenditures till I get back.
Yeah, I can't wait, man. It's going to be fun.
That sounds like a great time, guys.
So all the Podnuts and Mini PC Show Android App Addicts fans, meet us there, Bellingham, Washington. It's not that far of a drive for you, no matter where you're at.
Right.
Especially if you're from Canada. It's...
You know what I was thinking as I was driving this morning? I was thinking we should probably add a news segment. What do you guys think about that?
I'm not going to say no. I'll just say we have a lot of links every week we leave on the floor. I'm okay with leaving more links on the floor, but then the question just becomes, how do we segment out? How do we prioritize what news is news? Right. Because we kind of do.
Yeah, these links at least new, can be news.
News-ish releases. But not really news per se.
Do you want to do like, you know, presidential campaigns and things like show? Is that what you're saying, Ryan? Do you want to talk about weather?
I'd like to keep the politics side. I was just thinking maybe, updates as far as how devices are doing, how companies are doing, how the owner of this company is doing. Just updates and news segments. I just thought that might be a little different, you know.
Give it a try. Stock picks too, man.
Stock picks.
Gold, buy gold.
Is gold still hot?
I don't know. It just sounded good.
Yeah. I know it was a little while ago.
Sure, yeah. I'm not sure. You guys want to get right into the emails?
Sure. Okay. I'm going to be reading some emails here. So our first email is from Greg Smith. Says, hey guys, a couple shows again. One of you mentioned the electric imp, but didn't really talk much about it. It's not overly powerful or anything, but it's good Internet of Things. I bought it to create a Wi-Fi barbecue thermometer using this Instructables page, and he gives us the link there. And we can put the link somewhere out there for you. I got it built and discovered that the data store that they had used was no longer open for registration. Since I was doing this just to show a coworker that he could build something like this, I lost interest and didn't look into modifying the code to use a different data store. One thing I thought was really cool about the Electric Imp is the way you set up the Wi-Fi. You need the SSD and the password of the network you want to connect to. The SSID and the password of the network you want to connect to. Then you set up an app to set it up. Then you use an app to set it up. You put the info in the app, hold the IMP against the screen. The app uses BlinkUp to flash the screen of the phone, and the IMP has a light sensor to pick it up. Works beautifully for me. Oh, I get what he's saying there.
Yeah, that's like the very first quote-unquote smartphones put out by Microsoft. You would literally have to hold the phone up towards the screen, and the whole screen would almost barcode-like blink patterns all across it, and that would program the watch. So that's the same exact kind of mechanism, which I think is really cool because all you need is a simple light sensor to do it, and then it becomes OS agnostic. You should be able to do that kind of programming, you would think, from any OS. I do love the idea of a connected thermometer. If I was still barbecuing, aka if I had a functional barbecue, I would without a doubt make this one, because this looks very simple. Simple 9-volt battery, electric imp, which I believe was only like $15, and a electric probe thermometer, which can't be more than $2-3.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. And it's, again, the IMP was the one that was really not much bigger than what looks like a micro SD card. Literally, wow. It looks like that small. It's quite tiny. The 9-volt battery, I think, is technically bigger than the whole electric IMP.
Wow. Yeah, I don't barbecue either. If I do, I've got a George Foreman electric one that I put out there, and I don't know. I'm anti-American or something, I guess.
Well, no. I mean, partially you're in frozen tundra-esque area. But see, I could picture you not barbecuing per se, but you doing more of the smoking. Smoking the meat.
I did try to smoke salmon one time, but I couldn't keep it lit.
Yeah, not falling for that one.
Here. Okay. I got another email. This is from Richard Klein. Says, "I'm working my way through the backing of many PC shows. Great stuff, although I worry about how much listening to it is going to end up costing me. Dor mentioned trying to use the Motorola Atrix lap dock and getting a display for a few seconds and then it going blank. Some of the latter generations of the lap dock has some form of DRM on the HDMI. The first gen lap dock works great with the Raspberry Pi A, B, or 0 back powering the Pi through the USB port. The B+ power supply won't power it through the regular USB port, so I made a cable that splits the 5-volt to a micro USB to power the Pi. The first-gen lap dock can only deliver a little over 750 milliamps of current, so I'm using a beefy phone power bank to power my Odroid UX3 with it, so it won't power the Pi 3. I gave a spare first-gen dock and a Raspberry Pi to a friend a year ago. If her daughter isn't using it, I might be able to send it to you, Richard."
I did reply to Richard, and I did say, if you can get it, I will happily give you some money for it, because the lap dock I have is literally almost causing tumors that I can't. It drives me crazy. I've spent at least a total on the dock and cables over $120.
Oh, man.
The dock was only, I think, $60. I got it for a good price, $70 maybe. And I know I spent every bit of $20 to $30 easily on cables, trying to figure out what cable I should have. And nothing seems to come close to actually working for more than 3 seconds, 4 seconds, and the screen turns off again. So what he's saying makes a lot of sense.
Oh, that's cool. That'd be nice if you could get a hold of that.
Yeah.
Or another one. Have you looked on eBay for the original?
Oh, yeah. That's where I got it. Oh. Off eBay. Because I love the idea of a Odroid C2 powered lap dock. It should, I would think, be able to give me 6, 8, 10 hours of battery life, and with the Odroid C2, be at least mostly usable, near desktop-like experience.
Speaking of laptop, did you get your keyboard in the mail yet?
No, sir. I did get the Pi Top in the mail, but as soon as I was near completion getting it done, I found out that about half of the keys on the keyboard did not work.
And they're sending you a replacement, you said?
I did get confirmation from them that it is en route.
Nice. Well, hopefully you can get it before we go out to Washington. That'd be nice.
Yes, which is a week away to the day, but it's en route from Hong Kong, which isn't historically known for being...
If you could meet it out there, you know, save a couple days travel across the USA.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening.
Can you get it rerouted to the Hampton Inn?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be nice, but also highly unlikely.
And I gotta say thank you to all these people who are sending in these emails. I really appreciate it. Our next one is from Andy West. He says, greetings. I really enjoyed listening to the show. Keep up the great work. I don't know if you have found this PC, but the Ocul Sirius B is x86-based mini PC that can be purchased with or without Windows 10. There are two models of which... there are two models, one of which is available now. Without further ado, here is a link. Thanks, Andy. Well, thank you for the link, Andy. And I haven't heard of this. See what it looks like. Scrolling through here. Have you? How about you, Dor? Have you heard of this?
I do not believe so. I think it's the first time. Heard
of that either. Ocul is OCKEL. Ocul Series B raises $420,000. Is that right?
Yeah. That's a thing. Okay, sorry. I haven't heard of this, period. Brand new to me, but it's also, you can't buy it. Okay. This, to me, is one of those coming soon devices. It's not a real device yet, quote unquote. It's a prototype device that you can back and support on Indiegogo, but you cannot buy yet. Hopefully, they are successful. Hopefully, they get it into a normal shipment pattern, and hopefully, it's something that you can buy here pretty soon, but right now you can't buy it.
So it looks like a kind of like a phone without a screen, or an SSD drive.
It's definitely phone size shaped. I almost think of it as Vensmile shaped. Right. Vensmiles were like $120 computers that were literally just a little bit bigger, wider than a phone. Thickness was narrower than some phones. This looks a little bit boxier, a little bit more square. The only thing that makes me really apprehensive is they say repetitively, yet as powerful as a desktop PC. Okay, no, it's not. It's not an it is not a i7. It's not an i5. Right. It's probably not an i3. But I do believe it's powerful, and I do believe it's good, and I do believe it's cool, and I do believe it could be really useful, but it's not as powerful as a desktop. It's a quad-core Intel Atom Bay Trail processor. If you have a desktop that's a Bay Trail processor, something tells me you're going to replace it as soon as possible.
They've also got the Black Cherry, a little upgraded one, 4 gigs of RAM and an Intel Cherry Trail X5 Z8300 processor.
Nice.
It's coming in May or June.
Well, and yeah, this is the thing that they have going against them.
$284 for that one.
Right. And to me, that's the thing they have going against them. And it is tick tock, tick tock. Every second, this is not real. Every second, this is not something I can just outright buy. Every second, this is not something that I can get shipped tomorrow. It's going to fall further and further behind other devices.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not ahead enough to be probably competitive in 8 to 10 months. So to me, they need to ship this thing now. The price seems fair, just a touch high, but I do think it looks like a really good build quality. Hopefully good support that comes with it as well. You know, good luck to them. Hope it becomes real. If it becomes real, I might look at buying one, but not until I can just literally order one and get it shipped a day or two later.
So the Sirius B Black Cherry, do you think 10 months from now that'll be a little bit behind the times?
I can tell you 6 months ago, I would have thought the Banana Pro and the Raspberry Pi 2, you know, it's going to be hard to get better than that. It's going to be hard to get better than that. And we have the Raspberry Pi 3, which is a full 50% more powerful. then a Raspberry Pi 2. And then we have an Odroid C2 for dollars more, $6 more, being in some scales three times more powerful than the Raspberry Pi 3. With that, I don't know. I would say they need to blow it out of the water now. So in 6, 8, 10, 12 months, they're still, you know, up there. They're still ahead of the curve, if you will. And it looks great. I got to say that again. This is a fantastic looking device.
What do you guys think about it having a mini headphone port for the microphone and headphone jacks? It just seems like, I don't know why you need that anymore. I mean, why would you take up the space with those?
Well, I can tell you, me, if I were to use this as my portable computer, when I take it to work and connect it, I would want to be able to hook my headphones up to it to hear stuff.
No Bluetooth headphones for you?
No. That's something else to charge. I'm already tired of charging stuff. I have a charger, like a stress. I'm like, you know, tired of charging.
I'm to the point where I need those, like those plastic fins where you're supposed to just line up Amazon Kindle Fires, like 10 at a time. And I'll just lay like different phones and everything in those things, you know, tablets and crap. Yeah, I need like some kind of a filing system for things that are charging.
Right, and I will say the Sirius Black Cherry one, it does have 4 gigs of RAM. That's good. It does have 64 gigs of eMMC, which is fair. It's good. What I don't see is a USB 3.0 or USB-C. Because to me, in 10 months, a lot more devices are going to be having that.
It looks like it has one USB 2.0 and one 3.0 port on it.
Good call. Okay. So that helps.
It doesn't have HDMI 2, which, you know, they are toting 4K resolution. So it might have HDMI 2 with Bluetooth 4.0.
Yeah. Again, right now, really cool. Hopefully in 10 months, it's still cool. I'm not sure if it's $250 cool.
Oh, right.
But yeah, I love it. At least they're pushing it and trying to become a quote unquote real product, because we do need more of these. And if you browse around their site, you'll also see the Fusion C, Fusion H, Nebula, and Sirius B. Like the Fusion C, I like the looks of that. That's a mini computer with a physical and antenna popping off of it. Same thing with the Fusion 8. So I like the fact they have multiple products. I will say that. Hopefully they just, you know, keep moving forward.
Okay, we got two more emails. You want to keep going on them?
Please.
Yeah, because we're gonna have 2 weeks off. So I might. Who knows what happens out in Linux Fest? I might start emailing myself while I'm out there. Okay, this one's from our friend Joe Hack. Joe says, "Mini PC Show 14. Door-to-door Geek compared Diet Pi, a feature-rich config tool for your device, to an OS such as Debian and a desktop such as Mate." Can I say Mate, Dor?
No, it's Mate.
Okay. Mate. Dor said that Diet Pi was a mature attempt at an operating system. As I understand it, the Diet Pi can install Debian and offers to install a desktop such as LXDE. I believe Diet Pi can also install other images. It's totally incorrect to compare Diet Pi to an operating system or a desktop, or to say Diet Pi is an operating system or a desktop. I think so. I'm going to stop right there just for a second. When you installed the Diet Pi, I think we did it, was it either live during the show or right after? Mm-hmm. Basically, that was kind of a launcher that asked you what OS you wanted to go into, right? Or what OS you wanted to install. So,
well, the seasoning that Diet Pi does is, to me, very mature, because what it does is it helps hold your hand in the decision-making process and the configuration and the installation process. Diet Pi is an operating system. It's Debian. It's Debian with a little spices on top, is what I'll say. And it offers to install LXDE, which I'm running as a desktop right now, which I've been running for a desktop for 2 weeks, which I've been carrying back and forth to work running as a desktop. So it is working like butter. It is so far the best OS experience I've installed on this C2 by far. Haven't installed Armbian, which just came out, and Armbian on my Qbox was unbelievably good. I just got to find the time to do it.
Joe says a fair comparison might be TaskCell, noting that DietPi is tied to specific hardware and TaskCell is not. I'm pretty sure Door does know the difference between an operating system, a desktop, and a configuration tool. So if it seems like I'm nitpicking, figure that not all listeners know the difference, so his comparisons might only serve to confuse. Since Door recommends DietPi for the Odroid, can he recommend if DietPi installs the correct hardware drivers, such as the accelerated OEM drivers, to support boards such as the Odroid, or might it actually deliver less than experience in some cases?
My experience is this is better experience than the official Ubuntu Mate edition. So they're doing a better job than the official quote-unquote distribution is doing.
Wow, that's cool.
And I will say, at first boot, the first thing it does is check for updates. This is a hardware-specific distribution, so all the drivers and modules should be configured specifically for this device. And as soon as you boot up the very first time, it does an update. So if there's any pending firmware updates or driver updates, it should get them right away, which Ubuntu Mate or no other official hard kernel distribution I've ever seen does that.
Joe says, I was confused by Dor's exclamation of what is OpenCV. Even as an OpenCV developer, I did a double check here. And he gives a link to the Wikipedia site for OpenCV. I don't remember us talking about OpenCV.
I remember being utterly confused by it, and then with like three or four back and forth with Joe, he uses it. He's a little bit confused by it as well. So that made me feel a hell of a lot better.
Programming language, OpenCV?
No, it sounded like more like a plugin for... Man, I'm going to butcher it. I can't even say.
Open source computer vision. I'll just go straight to the Wikipedia that he linked. It says a library of programming functions mainly aimed at real-time computer vision. Originally developed by Intel's Research Center in Russia, later supported by Willow Garage, and now maintained by ITSEs. The library is cross-platform and free for use under the open source BSD license.
So it's a bunch of libraries you can use to help with speedy development, is what I'll say.
Sounds good. We'll keep going. Mm-hmm. So Joe addresses my issue now. He's on Cat 5, 6, 7. If Eric Ardini wants to do the Cat cable run right the first time, why not consider using Cat 7 cable? Shopped right, it's often not much more costly than good Cat 5 or 6 cable, and can somewhat future-proof your install speed-wise. It's currently listed as good as 10 gigabits per second, and is much more resistant to interference than Cat 5 and 6. In most cases, the casing is thicker as well, perhaps more ideal for an underground conduit install, where at a minimum water can condense. As far as interference with the electrical line, I think it'd be very unlikely. I've never had an issue. I think you might want to check your zoning laws to see if a separate conduit for the network cable might be required. I have no clue. I believe Cat cable is generally good for 100-meter, 330-foot run, but you might want to double-check for specific types and usages. In any case, I once ran more than a mile of Cat 5 in my attic, cheaped out, and regretted it ever since. I've shopped some real Cat 7 bargains on eBay. The Keydex brand is one of my favorites, but hard to find sometimes. All right, I'm going to stop there for a second. You know what? Honestly, before this email, I'd never heard of Cat 7. I thought Cat...
Same here.
I didn't even know that was a thing. And then, I was talking to I had the building inspector over here today, and I was kind of giving him my idea of running these cables underground. And yeah, I'll probably definitely put it in its own conduit. Once the trench is open, that's the hard part. I do plan on laying three pieces of conduit all in that same trench, so it'll be two electrical lines and one network cable line. On wire twisting, I believe, and I could be wrong, that mostly reduces interference for other wires and things like magnets, i.e. compasses on a vessel. But that does help to reduce crosstalk in the cables. I believe it is shielding is what would make the big difference in protecting the wires in the Cat cable from the electrical interference from the AC wires.
Well, this brings you back to the point of using multi-mode fiber. It's a little bit expensive, but you don't have to worry about any of those interference issues. And you can easily get 10 gig out of multi-mode fiber.
10 gig, that's just to me.
Yeah.
What do you think a couple hundred feet of multi-mode fiber would run me?
I've seen deals for $50 for 100 feet.
Not bad. So,
yeah, it's about 30 meters.
Well, then the question is, I don't think the expense would be the cable itself, but it would be what you're plugging it into on both sides.
Right, yeah. Exactly. I mean, you had said before you can get the was it optical to copper or optical to electrical boxes. I can't think of the word I want to use. The transceivers where you can convert the light to electrical impulse signals for your switch. Those would be a little bit cheaper than getting an actual switch that has SFP ports. I just got a little switch not too long ago. I probably said this on the show already. It was like 89, maybe high 70s. So it was for a 10-port, no-name brand switch with two SFP ports and 10 copper ports on it. That was a pretty good deal.
I honestly could use a switch of that size anyway in the house. And those were gigabit, the copper ones, right?
Yep. It was all 10, 100, 1,000. It wasn't 1 gig at all. I mean, 10 gig, rather. I don't think you even need 10 gig, you know? What are you going to have out there?
A Wi-Fi router so that I can have Wi-Fi at every piece of my property.
Yeah.
You mean you're not going to have your Oculus Rift back there?
I might.
I don't know.
That's my whole plan. I don't plan on, you know, installing a desktop computer out in the shed. I just want to put an access point out there. And now that I move stuff around the yard, I don't think I can wirelessly hop the way I was before, you know, from one Wi-Fi to the other. I haven't tried it yet, though, but I can't try it until I get power out there.
I actually did that in my garage. I ran a multimode fiber from, you know, the crawl space into the attic, and then from the attic over into the garage attic, dropped it down and put a wireless access point just to get out for the backyard, because once you're outside in the backyard on the back porch, you really can't get the wireless from inside the house. So in its way, it works out great during the summertime, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I don't have the greatest cell phone reception with the Google Fi here in my town, so, you know, I need the Wi-Fi even, you know, for my phone service.
Gotcha. Well, Microsoft.
All right, so I'm going to keep going here. This
is a long email.
Yeah, this is long. Joe's good for long emails, but he's got a lot of good points he needs to get at us. I cannot believe Dora's pricing a solder kit for a noob at over $150. That's ridiculous. I've been soldering for over 50 years since I received my first Heath kit. And after shopping Amazon, I think $10 would be excessive. I'm pretty sure that even many professional bench folks do not spend that kind of money, $150, on a solder kit. Dor, you told me you were going to go to start with soldering four USB wires. Dude, save yourself. Just twist the wires together and use some scotch tape and seal it off and call it good.
I did, and it didn't work. And no, I'm not going to buy a $4 solder thing because, A, I'm not cheap. Two, I don't like junk. Three, I want to only do this once. And if you're doing this for any length of time, then you should know what I need is more than just a single soldering gun. Preferably a soldering gun with replaceable tips, number one. And then I need the accessories to go with it, like the helping hands, magnifying glass, the solder sucker, all the solder that I'm going to need for at least a little bit of time. I'm also doing this in a enclosed area, so I would like to have at least a fan for ventilation. I would also like to have a breadboard and other things like that to go along with it, so I can first prototype before soldering, aka I don't half-ass anything I ever do. So if I spend $4 on a soldering thing, rest assured I'm only going to use it once, and then I'm never going to do it again.
Because I only spent $4. You don't want a gun, though.
Well, yeah, no gun.
Yeah, what do you think of the station? When I had the shop, I had a soldering station, and mostly I use the hot air for, you know, melting the glue inside of an iPod so I could lift the screen off, things like that. Heat shrink tubing, though, if you're going to get into that, it's nice to have the hot air blowing.
Right, and yes, and I would want to buy stuff ahead of time, like heat shrink tubing. And all the other little things that go along with it. So I'm not in the middle of a project following something, and then I find out, oh, well, I need this. Well, let me order it and wait 2 days. I don't want to do that. I am extremely ADHD to the point where if I have to stop any time during the process to wait for something, I'm never going to pick it back up again.
Oh, yeah. So you're getting all your ducks in a row before you even try to start any of the stuff.
I would like to, because I don't want that. I don't want something to stop me. If I stop, that's different. I stop, but I don't want something stopping me because I don't have the right stuff or the right components or the right pieces or the right, you know, whatever. So when and by the time I was done pricing it out, it was over $100, and I wasn't done yet. So I guesstimated and said 150, because the soldering gun alone was $40, and that was a good brand name. I'm trying to remember.
Like a Weller or something.
Weller, yeah. Exactly. A Weller with a replaceable tip, which I was able to shop around, originally priced $60. I was able to find for like $40.
Yeah, and that Weller, that'll last you forever and for your whole life, probably.
And that's what, and that's the thing. I only want to buy stuff once. I don't want to buy it every 3, 6, 9 months or whenever something goes boom.
Right. Yeah, that's the opposite. That's the way I would be. You know, I'd buy thinking it's a good deal, and then I'm in the middle of a project and it breaks. And
yeah, not cool.
You have an earthquake there, Dor? You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. How you doing?
I'm all right.
That's good.
I saw your camera moving, so I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah, I just shifted the camera a little bit, you know. Keeping you on point.
Okay. So we got an email from Jesse Beach. It says, "Hey, guys, Jesse in St. Peter's here. I was talking with Dor about which mini PC to get, and I ended up going with the Pi 3 over the Odroid for now, based on the ease of build with RetroPie and Emulation Station. After watching a bunch of videos, setting this up for the Pi seemed much easier than any Linux build instructions I could set up for the Odroid. But I think the next PC setup will be the Odroid. They also have a build for Kodi that works in RetroPie and runs smooth on the built-in Wi-Fi."
Yeah, I gotta say, the more I'm using these, and I do have another Pi up and running now, the more I'm realizing, okay, to me, Linux is not hard. Linux is not complicated. Linux does require comprehension, investigation, research to understand how to do stuff. On all these Pi things, they're coming into it assuming, I think, people don't know. People are not Linux users. So I love the way all these Pi things are almost overly holding people's hands. And like to do an installation of RetroPie or Laka or Kodi on these, it's so well documented and the setup is so wizard-like. You just basically click next, 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 and you did it, boom, boom, and it just works. That is the thing that I'm liking about these Pi distributions, and that's where I think I use the word maturity, because this is nothing like, well, copy this configuration file, type this in the command prompt, copy, you know, then do this, and then spin around 3 times. Mm-hmm. It is almost easy, dare I say. And to be honest, that's what I'm really liking about all these Pis that I'm having up and running.
Yeah, he also has another part on this email. They said we don't have to read on the show. So I'm not going to read on the show because he may not want it. But there's a good chance that, there's a chance that he may be on the same plane as I am next week.
Well, you might encounter him between Chicago, Portland, or maybe at one of the places.
Or on the way back. Yeah, that would be very cool. And if he sees some fat bald guy, he should definitely come up and try to shake his hand. Thank you, Jesse.
Now, do we have one more?
I think that was it.
I think there was not another Richard one. No, that was the horrible voice dictation one. Yeah,
we did get one. we'll explain that. We did get another email. One of our listeners, Richard, was driving, I think he said, on his way to Florida, but he was talking into his phone and having the voice dictation go to the email that he sent us. And I had a hard time reading it. Just reading it to myself, and I don't think I could read it to everybody else here. But I thought we could have an idea where we could have some text-to-speech go on what had printed out, so it could go from his voice to speech-to-text, and then go from the email to text-to-speech and back to out. And just, I think it'd be fun to just listen to find out what that would sound like.
Yeah, I'll try to have that ready for the next show. That's my goal.
Oh, that'd be cool.
A free website that you can do that. Drop some text into it, and the robot will talk back to it for you.
Yeah, all those I used in the past really sound bad. I'm going to try to hopefully the TalkBack client in Android would be able to do it better. That's my goal.
We can work on this in the hotel room, Dor, and then maybe we can add music to it, too.
Okay, that sounded really bad. I'm just saying. Okay, now, because I have to change the subject. I have my Banana Pro running as my own cloud instance, which is still running good. I have my Odroid C2 running like a desktop experience on a third monitor, which is purring like a kitten. And then now I have another Pi up and running, and I had a reason to do it. Quick as I can, backstory. I like IRC. I like the people in IRC. I like the interactions I have on IRC. I hate how IRC looks, acts, and behaves on a tablet and on a phone. And I am primarily on those devices, it seems like. On a desktop, IRC is fine. The clients are fine. It all works fine. But when I'm not sitting at my studio, I need to communicate with other people. I was looking at Slack. Slack is closed-sourced, IRC-like beautification, looking pretty, team collaboration, channels, direct messages, private groups, all that kind of thing. Then I found Mattermost. Mattermost, M-A-T-T-E-R-M-O-S-T, is an open source Floss implementation of Slack. I have an installation of it now on a VPS. Anyone who wants access to it, just send me an email. I'll give you an invite. You can come on group. It's for basically the Podnuts community. We can play in it, have fun in it, talk back and forth to each other. It's not Google searchable, so it's like a private chat. It's almost like a BBS kind of thing. But in there, I wanted to run some bots, have some automatic things happen. Man, what I first wanted to work on was I have an automatic routine, just like this show, where I bookmark something, it gets sent to a spreadsheet. Well, I also wanted to say, if I bookmark something, I want it to appear in this chat automatically. So in this Mattermost server, I have a Android App Addicts channel. And every time I bookmark an app now, my Raspberry Pi 2 running Diet Pi with a Python installed and a Python script running is able to automatically read from an RSS feed and post to the AAA channel in this Mattermost server. So if you want to see all the apps as I find them, quite literally as I find them, all you have to do is join this Mattermost server and join the AAA channel, and you can see them randomly just show up, and it will say Door Geek Space Bot as the user that's posting them. So you can see when I drop things in there. And it's just, I wanted to have another reason to put up a Pi, and I found the reason, so it's up and running.
Pretty cool, Door. That's a really good idea.
And so far, it's working good. I am going to keep looking at the bots, see if there's any more things that I can do with them that are interesting. Because this Pi is a Raspberry Pi 2, and it's only doing this. So there's plenty of more work this thing can do. I just got to figure out what I want it to do.
Did you happen to post maybe an invite on the G Plus community?
To this, no. I just wanted to first talk about it on the show. I like to see who's listening to the show and who engages on the show. And then a week or two later, I'll put it in the Mini PC Show Google Plus group and see who else comes on board.
Exclusivity. You heard it here, folks.
There you go.
You're off the press.
Stop. Very cool. I'm pretty sure that's all we got for emails. Yep. Now my question is, we definitely have more than a couple links in our notes. Was there any of them that you guys saw that you thought might be cool?
That Armbian that you were talking about, do you want to talk about that at all yet?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, it's Jesse's server and Jesse's backup or desktop. I haven't checked it out at all, but I just thought it sounded
good. Yeah, I am running Armbian on my Qbox, C-U-B-O-X, and I believe it's a Qbox Lite. And it runs really good. I will say it looks really good. Pretty snappy. Boots up really quick. It technically hangs on shutdown. It doesn't shut down right, but that's no big deal. You can download two different versions of it. One is a command line version of it, and the other one is a full desktop version of it, which I'm pretty sure is running a LXDE desktop. That seems to be the favored desktops that I'm seeing. Yeah, this is the exact same desktop in fact. There's little doubt in my mind. This is pretty heavily optimized for the Odroid C2. I would hope it's for my expectations with the Qbox, pretty optimized, aka very competitive or even better than the experience I'm getting with the Diet Pi. And it's based off of Debian Jesse, and one of the things they tout is Docker ready, which some people, that alone will get them to install it, because to install Docker on like Ubuntu desktop, even if you know what you're doing, even if you know where to go to find the documentation, is at least a 20-minute ordeal. And that's when, and that's on an i7 with 16 gigs of RAM, blah, 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 blah.
So you can just go to a repository and get Docker?
It looks like it's already installed.
So what's Docker?
Think of Docker as, okay, you remember back in school, the olden days, your teacher had a overhead projector. Okay. Docker is the overhead projector. And anytime your teacher wants to completely change what that projector is doing and looks like, she just slides a transparent piece of plastic over top it, and then bam, you see this whole new thing. You can also layer those translucent, transparent sheets so you can see completely different things, put them together, combine things to make a complete picture. Okay. Docker is a system that allows you to drop in place applications or services on a computer without having to install and configure. But then in Docker, you can do the opposite. You can install something, tweak, 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 play, play, play. You can then suck that installation off of that box, move it over to another computer, and drop it on that computer, and it has the exact same configuration. It is the exact same thing. So it makes you have the ability to literally have a test dev thing. Hypothetically, you have two computers. On one computer, you want to download this app, configure it, get it all working exactly perfect how you like it, whether it be a web server or whether it be a desktop application. You can then suck that container back up, go to your production computer, drop that Docker container, and it will be the exact same thing.
That's nice. So you don't have to mess up your regular computer or anything.
And so what Docker also allows you to do is what's called scalability on demand. So you can have other systems in place to where if you're running a business and you need more servers, I'm getting overwhelmed, we're going viral kind of thing, Docker allows you to basically, using another tool called Shipyard is one of them, all automatically say, now give me 5 more servers. And literally in 10 seconds or less, you can have that number of servers up and running thanks to the Docker technology.
Wow.
It's cool stuff. Hopefully it becomes the standard. I would love in the future where we don't have to install applications using apt-get or any other application interface like that, where we can instead just say, Docker download Firefox, Docker download Chrome, and voila, it's just working.
Docker download Chrome with all the anti-advertisement stuff already on it.
Okay, but that sounds like an oxymoron, but okay.
Yeah.
So I will say, I am going to try this Armin, and we're going to not do a show for a week, so we'll be back in 2 weeks. Hopefully I will do it by then, but here's the beautiful part again about Pis, which I love. I can simply turn off my C2, eject that SD card, take a second SD card because they're pennies, put Armin on it, stick it in the Odroid C2, and if I like it or don't like it and I want to go back, I can simply power it down, switch cards back, and I'm right back where I left off. So to me, that's one of the glorious parts about the mini single board computers.
I need to buy like a 6-pack of micro SD cards.
Yeah.
And I agreed with you when you said it, and I never thought of it. Why isn't anybody offering a 6-pack or a 3-pack or whatever?
Yeah. I mean, well, because I had one. I got one that works well, one that didn't work well with one of the, you know, devices. So I want a reliable 6-pack. You know what I mean? I don't want. Maybe that's why, because maybe you do want to mix it up a little bit. You don't want to have all the same kind, because it might, if one doesn't work or isn't compatible with something, then you're stuck with 6 of them that aren't.
Well, I can say with SanDisk Ultra UHCs, I've had nothing but success on everything I ever put it in. Sometimes I might have to DD the image a couple times, but I've always got every card to work in every device so far.
Yeah, I think the one that gave me troubles was an off-brand. It had fancy coloring on it, though.
Well, it's pretty. That helps, right?
I thought it was going to. It turns out, no. Ooh. That's me taking my Raspberry Pi up against the side of my mic stand.
That'll fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got it now.
Hey, Eric, I was chuckling about Docker because I had asked Dora the same question not too long ago, and I kind of had forgotten, too, a little bit what it was all about.
Did you ask him on the show?
Pretty good experience. I think I did, actually. I could be wrong, but I think I did.
Wow. Well, it's hard. It really is difficult to explain Docker because to a lot of people, when they first hear it, they think it's useless. They think we have virtual machines. Why do we need Docker?
That's what I was
Well, we don't, quote unquote, need it. But there is certain benefits you get with Docker versus VMs. I can see them working in tandem. I think the use case of virtual machines is going to narrow. They're not going to be what you're in all day as an IT admin managing domains. You're not going to be in VMware, whatever, vSphere managing VMs as much as you're going to be in applications like Kubernetes or Shipyard managing Docker instances, which are going to communicate with the back end of virtual machines. It's really complex and convoluted. It's just like anything else in computers. Every single month, positions fracture and technologies fracture, and they give birth to new positions and new technologies. The old technologies are still there. They're still relevant. They're still used, but they're not like the primaries anymore. They like fall in line to being just part of another tool chain. Docker, I do believe, is going to be sickeningly important here pretty soon, especially with Windows Server 2016. And I hate saying that. I just got sick to my stomach.
Like, wow, where did that come from?
Now they have their own distribution of Linux now, though.
They have many distributions where they come ready to roll. One of the first ones, it was made by actually Brian Kilpatrick, I think his name is. Kimmer's name. Who is one of the main guys with the Linux kernel, Core OS, I believe is what it's called, where its goal, I think, was nothing but to get Docker more prevalent and popular. Oh, man, this is good. I just looked at the Armbian description a little bit more. The Odroid Armbian desktop does have hardware-accelerated video playback where possible. That is good, because that's one of the things that I think really sets apart distributions from each other. Also, the desktop is XFCE. I was mistaken. It's not LXDE. To be honest, I like LXDE more, so that's a good plus, because right now I am using LXDE, and it's working fine on the DiPi, but, you know, I think I'm going to have to give this a roll here.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been in Linux, because those two desktops aren't even the ones, I think, wasn't it, like, GNU was one of, wasn't that a desktop?
GNOME.
And was it LX?
It is, but GNOME's heavy, quite heavy.
It's still a thing, though.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm running right now, my desktop.
And what was the other one? KDE, right?
Yeah, crappy KDE, which I don't care. I still think it's crappy. I don't care.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of KDE. I know a few people are.
I know I liked it for a reason, Brian.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy GNOME. Ubuntu Mate. On my Raspberry Pi currently. But
Mate. I tried earlier. We can't do that.
We can't do that. But I definitely want to give the Armbian a run. I wish I had, like you said, a pack of SD cards. It would make it a little easier. I think I got to go shopping. They're not that expensive.
My birthday was this week. I have some money. I should go just buy SD cards with it.
I like money.
Hang out.
Okay, one other one that I want to shoot out here. Actually, let me do this one. Line 135. Giddy, giddy, giddy woo. That's all I got to say. This thing is pretty, and I love the fact, okay, I'm going to really give a bad reference here. If you're outside the U.S., this was probably going to make no sense. And if you're inside America, this probably won't make any sense. There was a show, I don't know if it's still even on TV. It used to be on the Food Network. Sara Lee, I think was her name. She did a show cooking called Semi Homemade. And the gimmick was, while she would use, you know, spices and herbs and fresh garlic, there was always large components of whatever meal she was making that was already like pre-made. Like, dare I say, like boxed mac and cheese or, something like that, to where it would cut the prep time down to make it easier, to make it quicker, to make it more palatable for people to actually do in their house. And she had a rock on her finger that had to be like $20,000. It was huge. Okay, this article on Lifehacker I got sent by Cody Cooper, which, ironically, the screen being shown is Street Fighter. Something tells me that's real. The real reason he sent it to me. But this is building a IKEA-based arcade machine cabinet. And you don't have to build everything from scratch. This is semi-homemade DIY hacking emulator game style, where the entire cabinet is basically a desk that you buy, which is only $49. Okay. And then you convert it, you hack it into a arcade cabinet. And I think, I'm sorry, this is frigging awesome. total price, I want to say, was like $250. Partially because the monitor, yeah, quote unquote,
is literally,
yeah, okay, good. The monitor is a 24-inch HDMI monitor with speakers. That's $150. Right there is half of the cost. To be honest, I understand it should be half the cost. It's a big monitor, but here's what I really like about it. This looks modular and flexible enough to where if you want, you can build the whole cabinet and just use a little screen. And then when you get the money, upgrade it. So,
yeah. Well, you know, they've also got a $50 stool in there, which could be replaced by any $10, you know, chair.
Well, no, milk crates, because they're free, right?
Yeah, well. $8.
Get a nice 5-gallon bucket.
Oh, yeah, big one.
Yeah,
there you go. There you go.
Yeah, so this is definitely great find. I love the fact that you don't have to make everything from scratch. Don't get me wrong. I think it's really cool making stuff from scratch. But I also appreciate not having to make everything from scratch.
Right.
And I will say, if you want quick advice on joysticks or buttons, the person I know with the most experience is Cody Cooper. He has spent more on arcade sticks and buttons than I've probably spent on cars in my life.
Wow. Now, did he give his seal of approval on these button choices and joysticks at all? Or did he say, this is good except for that part? Anything like that for you?
Yes and no. He said they're good enough, but if you really want the great feel of the arcade, then he said you got to get this one or another brand. There was two of them, he said, and I can't remember what they are.
Konami brand. That's the one, you know, I don't know if Konami made their own joysticks or not.
Don't know, but I think this is awesome. This is a great find. It's going to be in the notes. It's called the Arcade Mikey. Mike, and that's because the desk from IKEA is the Mike desk.
You know what? What I like about this is that with the other one that you had, it seemed like you were a little cramped. I mean, it was good enough to, you know, sit at a bar or something and do a little gaming. But this thing, man, you got plenty of room to spread out. You know.
Yeah, the good about this is the physical size of it. The bad of it is it's only one player.
And the other bad of it is it's kind of sit down because it's at a desk where you might want to have it up on, you know, cinder blocks to get it up there where you can stand up next to it.
I mean, if you wanted higher, that shouldn't be hard to do, get done. But honestly, I like the idea of sitting down because when I used to play arcade games and when I got good at them, I had to sit down. Mm-hmm. Because I would literally play Super Mario Brothers for an hour straight in the arcade where, you know, I remember distinctively, and this might be a new story to Brian, but I think Eric's heard this one before. I remember I was like maybe 14 years old. My brother was like 15 years old. We each got $40 in cash. We both said, let's go down to the arcade. We both went down to the arcade. I spent one quarter on Super Mario Brothers, and I had one Coke. And he came up to me before I was done playing and said, hey, can I borrow like a dollar? I said, for what? You have $40. He said, no, I don't. I spent it all on games.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I sat there. It was like an hour, 20 minutes. It was one of my better runs on one quarter, and he went through $40.
Wow. But he had a pocket full of tickets, though, and he was cashing them in on some good, you know, Jack's sets or something, right?
There's no tickets now. Oh. No, this was back in the 80s. There's no tickets.
No skee ball?
Nope. He just gave up his money on games like Dragon Slayer, where you just eat your money. You know, you just die. Another one that just caught my eye, and it's really just because of the name, which I will admit, because I had other older Android-like set-top boxes, that that I thought were kind of cool with the name Melee, M-E-L-E. That's really the only reason why I looked at this one. And it's at notebookitaliana.it, a.k.a. it's in Italian.
Right.
Ooh, stuff. And the real reason I caught my eye was because it basically, the Melee wants to sell like an Intel compute stick-sized device with Ubuntu built on it, ready to roll. My experience is Melee, good, fair. Sometimes companies like Intel have so much overhead research and development, their prices are going to be more, where these guys might be able to do comparable quality to the Intel compute stick and cost less.
It's funny. When I translated it, you know, translated the page, the very first, you know, we're translating this Italian page, you know, whatever. The first sentence is, we are located in Hong Kong. Bummer. I thought we had the Lamborghini of mini PCs here, but no, it was a nice paint job, though.
Yeah, and they do have a video showing it in action. Ubuntu 14.04, Intel Atom, Bay Trail 1.33, quad-core processor. I don't see 16 gigs of eMMC. On a Linux desktop, 16 gigs of eMMC is fair, because it typically only takes a gig or two or three at the most for the install. So you should have at least some space. 2 gigs of RAM, DDR3 on Ubuntu, that's kind of usable.
Yeah,
so this I think is cool. Hopefully they make it in mass production. Hopefully it's going to cost a little bit less. Right now it looks like it's $119. To me, compute sticks, their target should be like $80.
Well, it says they're currently in development and should be available in the market by the end of May at a price of about $59.
Oh, wow. They do it $59. That's awesome.
You know, I like the idea. I know I don't personally need it here, but having a little bigger antenna that can stick out the side. It's got an external antenna jack on the side, and it looks like it comes with the antenna. But I have some in-laws and relatives whose houses, the way they're set up, they have a hard time like getting Wi-Fi all the way over in one room at the other end of the house, you know, sort of kind of thing.
Yeah, and to be honest, that's one of those things I do go back and forth with. Part of me thinks to have a physical antenna takes away from the beauty of it. You know, it looks, it isn't symmetrical. But then I think every time I have a device where there's no visible antenna, I know in the back of my mind I could be getting better reception if the thing had a friggin' physical antenna, you know, sticking out the side.
Well, the thing like this, I mean, I think, you know, the antenna might take away from its beauty, but then again, it's plugged into an HDMI port on the back of a television. You're not going to see it anyway.
Right, that's true.
Yeah, true, true, true.
Or if they made it possible, you can add your own external antenna.
It does look like there's a, like it shows the orange one, an orange colored one and a black colored one. It looks like there is a hole or a jack there where the antenna is located on the black one. So maybe you could.
Yeah. And I did buy, just between us guys here, I did buy a USB mic for my chip. The damn thing still hasn't came here yet because I want to try the Alexa Pi thing on my chip. Eric experienced, I think, I don't want to say stereotypical woes, but he definitely experienced some of the woes, and I think it was partially the documentation wasn't completely clear on at least one or two of the commands when me and him were going through it. But also, I think there was a version conflict in at least one of the pieces of software. But then this is weird. If there was the ability to log into your Pi and say, Docker, install, Alexa Pi, enter, it would download all the software that's needed for it and already have it pre-configured. You would have to just go back in and enter your personal account information.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It would be.
That's where my hang-up had to do, I believe, with an updated Java version and then somehow it wasn't authenticating with Amazon correctly. But I did get Pi drive from Western Digital. Did show up.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, it's not a very heavy hard drive, right? So when the post person put it on the side of my porch, it blew right off, and I don't know how long it was sitting down there. And that means from the top of my porch to that side is probably a good 12-foot drop. So it should be fine though. I think I have not got a chance to use it yet though.
Yeah, modern drives, the heads are supposed to be parked while it's powered down. so you should be fine.
I thought, isn't that an SSD drive?
No, that's a spinner, but 312 gigabytes.
No, 314.
Yeah.
Now, of usable space, probably 312 or 310.
314 gigabyte hard drive for $31.42.
Gosh, I really thought that was an SSD drive.
No, SSD 300 gig, that's going to be a lot more than $30.
$40. Absolutely. Is that USB 2.0, right?
Yeah, it's technically a 3.0 is what I gathered to when I looked at it, which is cool, which is good. It future-proofs it because, you know, in a matter of months, my logic, we're going to have all these single-board computers coming out, Raspberry Pi 4, whenever that comes out, and it almost has to have USB 3.0. It almost has to, as far as I'm concerned.
You know what would go really good with that is the
cake?
The UDU X86 board.
Oh, you posted that thing today.
Yeah,
I couldn't look directly at it.
Man, I was just talking about that just a few weeks ago. Just the fact of we haven't seen an update from them for a while. And I'm like, you know, I really thought this was going to be a real big hit when I first saw it come out. Just because it was the first quad-core board with 1 gig of RAM. You know, that was before the Raspberry Pi 2 had came out. I'm like, wow, this thing is awesome. It's going to run an Android. You can install Linux on it. And yeah, I was getting a little long on the tooth, but they just recently updated with the UDU X86. And this is a 2.2 gig processor, quad-core processor, 4 gigs of RAM. This looks like a beast.
Well, physical size, it's definitely bigger than a Pi, but it most certainly is not big. That's one of the things that I really do like about it. The physical form factor, I think, is near perfect. 8 gigabyte of internal MMC, which is a great jumping off point for an OS, you know, fantastic. And then you get to the fact that it's Intel, the low end one, 2 gigs of RAM. That to me is a great start for this. Right. I did not see, estimated delivery November 2016. I really want these guys to hurry up. And the main reason I want them to hurry up is, the quicker they get out there, the quicker they're going to be leading. You know, this is really, oh man.
Well, they first originally started with Kickstarter, and then with with an updated board, they're going the same route with the Kickstarter. Their pledge goal was 100,000, and they've already blown that away by 134,000, which is awesome. But I agree. Let's hurry up and get this out.
Yeah, and it has, of course, a built-in NIC. It has USB 3.0, eMMC, of course. It also has a SATA connector. Oh, giddy, giddy, giddy. But it also has a M2 SATA connection, which that is the solid-state drives that look like nothing more than bare boards, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, Linux, Android, Windows, 8 gig of eMMC onboard Windows. You better have a fit and trim installation is all I'm saying. And you better have a USB 3.0 drive connected for storage. Also, the network is gigabit Ethernet, which to me is the only way you really should go. Built-in Wi-Fi 802.11ac, which is, for right now, the future. It's good. Bluetooth 4.02. The multi-monitor setup, that's the one I really do find interesting. That means to me they have basically extra horsepower running over that HDMI, which is really good. And they do mention it, and this is what I wanted to see. They actually do mention that this could be a good base for at least a low-end Steam machine. And to be honest, I agree.
Wow.
There's plenty of Steam games on there that is not, you know, Call of Duty or Crisis or whatever. There's plenty of lower resolution games that are on Steam that you can play. They also mention that a 8-board cluster that you can do. They have a cluster kit that you can do. You cluster 8 of these things together. I don't know what in the hell you need that for, but I don't know what you couldn't do. Now, that's something I could see Joe Heck right now trembling in his chair thinking about having 8 of these things clustered together.
That's definitely a supercomputer. A supercomputer.
Well, I've never heard of Intel Curie before.
Madame Curie, isn't she the one that like found radar or something, or radiation maybe? I don't know.
Yeah. Oh yeah,
I
remember
that. I have no idea, but it also has Intel rear real sense, not rear real sense, which I also have no idea what the hell that is either. Sure, yeah, you know.
Wow, yeah, that.
Yeah, they had 53 days to go, so it's only been active for 7 days. They only had a goal. To me, this is really, really humble of them. Only $100,000. They already are up to $134,000. So they sure have no. I like projects that clearly break that barrier. Clearly break it.
10 times more powerful than Raspberry Pi 3.
That's yeah, but I know, and it's very easy to throw out claims like that. It is an comparing Intel to ARM is really difficult because they both do things differently.
Right.
And Intel now has the extra buses built into the chip and all this kind of thing. So it's really difficult to say 10 times more powerful. I'll just put it like this. Genuine Intel quad-core 2+0 gigahertz processor with multi-gigs of RAM versus a Raspberry Pi should beat it every time. You know, period.
Looks like it's also exactly 10 times faster than the UDU quad was.
Now this does Arduino.
Yeah, it does both x86 stuff and Arduino stuff, which literally that confuses me. Okay. If they say it does, sure. I don't know.
Why not?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, and you can still pledge more, $89 or more. There's 279 out of 300 left. Early bird special, where you get the one x86 basic board. That's a quad core, 2 gigs of RAM, eMMC, 8 gig. That's for $89. I still think it's a very, very fair price.
Right. It looks like they took, if you look at it, it looks like two Arduino boards kind of put together side by side.
Sure.
Yeah, that's the size of it.
Yeah.
The early bird for the UDU x86 Advanced is $20 more, and then you get
4 gigs of RAM.
4 gigs of RAM, quad core, 2.2 gigahertz.
Oh, yeah. Slightly revved processor.
Nice. So it looks like they're going to allow you to boot from the USB, EMC, SATA, SD, SATA connector, or even from the LAN. That's pretty cool.
Jeez. Yeah. My lord. I got to stop looking at this, guys.
I know this thing does. It's like a Swiss Army knife.
It
has the 6-axis accelerometer and gyroscope built onto it, like your phone would for using it for gaming or movement. Wow, yeah, let's throw some more stuff on there.
You can do that too.
I mean I can't. I haven't thought of any mini PC. These single board computers that I would have used a 6-axis, but that, when the possibility to use that's there, then, there might be some things that could come to mind.
You can use it on your boat. You can use it while you're flying.
You could use it to feel like you're flying.
Right.
You just Velcro it to the front of your hat and put on a Google Cardboard and flight simulator it. I don't know.
Yeah, now, here you go, guys. Line 135 in our notes. This to me is like the proof in the pudding. We've said on this show more than a couple of times, and it's not special that we said this, but we said on the show how Raspberry Pi is where the action's at. That's where the community's at. That's where the active development seems to be going to. That's where it seems to be the hot place to go to. Well, Raspberry Pi got a big boost, as far as I'm concerned, in popularity and support. Because if you go to googlecreativelab.github.io/coder, Google is now on board with making a simpler way to make web stuff on the Raspberry Pi, is what it says. It says, Coder is a free open source project that turns the Raspberry Pi into a simple platform that educators and parents can use to teach the basics of building for the web. New coders can craft small projects in HTML, CSS, and JavaScript right from the web browser.
That's awesome.
This is the kind of reason, this exact project is the kind of reason why I feel very comfortable with supporting companies like Google.
Right.
because they actually seem to once in a while do something that does seem pretty selfless, which is just good for the internet as a whole. And anytime, this is like the weak link, and this has been the weak link in America for decades. Once you mention you're doing something for kids, you know, you get that, aww, you know, you get that appeal that no one, it's now hard to talk bad about them.
Right.
You know?
What does this have to do with Raspberry Pi if you do all this coding in the browser anyway?
Well, it's customized to be optimized to run on a Raspberry Pi. So it more than likely is not going to be a super long wait, a super long setup, a super long build process. It looks like you're basically interactively on the fly building code, and you have the ability to preview it at the same time. Remember, I don't know if I told you about this one, Eric, brackets. Did I ever tell you about brackets?
Kind of sounds familiar.
Okay, I'm not going to put a link to brackets in the notes, but brackets is a GitHub open initiative by Adobe. It is going to be the next core of their Dreamweaver type product. It is a code editor that is completely written in HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, which means anybody can write additions or plugins to it using code that they're already developing for, because that's what it's meant for. It's meant for HTML, JavaScript, and CSS editing for web pages. So that's what this looks like. This looks like the inline web-based editor that, to be honest, looks pretty dynamic, good color coding, good interactive, where you can watch the result of what you're typing at the exact same time as what you're typing. Everything from color pickers, property builders up on the side. This, to me, looks like a really good start, because this harkens back to the old days, okay? Back in the old days, people had to make code tight, because if you didn't make code tight, it ran like crap and nobody used it. Today's desktop computers are so obsessively overpowered, any incompetent programmer can do almost anything, and me as an end user might have a hard time understanding whether or not this is actually optimized code. Okay, now looking at this project, if they're able to make a decent web editor and preview machine on a Raspberry Pi, that tells me it's very highly optimized, very efficient, and hopefully better code that even if I want to run the same kind of thing in the future on my desktop, I'll be able to. But right now, they're just focusing for Pi type stuff.
Well, I need to learn how to do more web stuff. I mean, I'm in charge of a website now at work, and I'm in charge of a Facebook site at work, and I learned CSS, and I learned all that stuff. I always told myself, you know, now that I've learned all this, I never want to do it for my job, but I'm kind of stuck with it. So,
okay, well, I'm also going to throw this in out there, Eric. This will be good for basic web type stuff. Now, if you want to get into prettier, more interactive, more dynamic looking stuff, the other Google thing I would suggest is called Google Web Designer. Google Web Designer. But this is really meant for interactive, dynamic banner ad creation, because Google does ads, right? The gimmick is you can go into here, you can create a quote-unquote ad of any shape and size, and you can really do dynamic, interactive things with normal CSS that people a year ago thought was impossible. Boxes move, things change color, all kinds of transitions and stuff. And then when you're done, you can simply say, give me the HTML. And then you can put that into any web page of any size.
That's awesome.
Wow. See, that's,
I didn't know this existed.
There's a lot of Google projects out there. This one's been out for almost a year now. It will run on Windows, Mac, or Linux, period. Runs good, runs pretty fast, runs pretty snappy. They even have Google Web Developer YouTube channels devoted to showing you how to do things in this app. This, to be honest, is a great way to learn the possibilities in simple web HTML, JavaScript, CSS in an interactive way. And we just totally tangented.
Well, you're helping out a bro, you know? Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, got to try at least.
Yeah, I learned on Dreamweaver. And it's like everything with Adobe. Now, that version's way old. I don't want to spend another $700 again, so I don't even think you can buy. You can't even buy Adobe products anymore. You have to. Everything's online. You gotta subscribe to Adobe products now. I'm pretty sure.
It makes me. Yeah. Sick. Well,
what's it called? CS Cloud something or.
Yeah. Creative Suite. Yeah. CS.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'll sooner cut my own foot off before I pay them a dime. Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I'm forced to at work. I subscribe to PDF or whatever it is, Acrobat Pro.
Oh man, that's a crazy expensive one too.
Yeah, it is.
My deputy clerk and I, we both have a copy of it every month. But you know, and it was all because of one person's FOIA request, and we had to redact a bunch of stuff, and that's the only way to do it. Can't redact it without paying the man. So, but we use it for all kinds of stuff. It's a tool.
Oh, it's a powerful tool too. I'm not going to deny that. Yeah. Okay. Somebody highlight the aquaponics story there.
No, what's that?
It's on the bottom. It's highlighted. I didn't highlight it. Did I highlight? Line 139.
Yeah, check it out. No, I didn't highlight it. Noah. Is this Tracy's post?
No. But as soon as I saw this, I immediately pinged host of Book Nuts, Tracy Holtz. He is a reformed computer technician is the way I put it. He did IT support in the corporate environment for many years. He owned his own business, his own physical building for many years, successful business doing all kinds of support, and then got to a point where he said, no, I'm not doing this anymore. So now he's home farming aquaponics, raising chicks and eggs, and having a blast doing it, but he is a geek at heart. He is a nerd at heart. So when I showed him this link on raspberrypi.org, controlling your aquaponics system with a Raspberry Pi, he was literally giddy about it.
I've watched, like, he's got a nice YouTube channel that shows, that he's documented his whole process of, you know, of fish tanks and trellises and things and watering systems. It's just great information he's put out there.
Yeah, it looks pretty detailed. I'm looking at it right now as you guys are talking.
Yeah, and I almost forgot. Okay, aquaponics is the system, the ecosystem, where you have a large tank and you have one ecosystem in the tank supporting another ecosystem in the tank, causing a quote-unquote circle of life, if you will. And what it means is, like, on the very top, you can have cabbage growing on the top of the water, okay? But what's coming out of the roots and coming out of the plants as a byproduct is actually food for, let's say, tilapia. And then the tilapia poop is giving food back to the cabbage, to where he only has to give minimal food and resources into that ecosystem, and he can get cabbage and fish out of it. The only thing he has to do is keep the pH level constant, and then he's good. So the aquaponics system is regulating the pH, the balance, the temperature, and other things, keeping the filter active when it needs to be. Because the whole thing about aquaponics is trying to be as efficient as possible, spending as little money as possible into it so you reap the rewards and make money. Because everyone now is into small batch, locally sourced, whatever. And Tracy can now go to local area restaurants and supermarkets and say, I can sell you cabbage that's grown right here, or I can sell you fish that's grown right here, or blueberries or whatever, and people are eating it up.
How come our government doesn't do this?
Because it's smart.
It would break it.
No. When it's 20 years old, somebody in the government will say, hey, you know, we might be able to do this thing. It's new. All the kids are doing it.
Yeah.
This is a great idea.
Yeah, it's definitely cool stuff. And I, you know, if Tracy's listening to this, which I don't expect him to, because he's a busy fella tending to his greenhouse, his farm, his tractor, and his aquaponics.
And drilling holes in his finger.
And drilling holes. Man, that was nasty. So this is really cool.
Do you see the size of that lemon? Looks like larger than a grapefruit.
Oh, was that a lemon?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They say it's a lemon.
I couldn't even
it's
identify.
Bigger than a pineapple.
I couldn't identify what kind of fruit that or whatever that was.
That is ginormous.
See, that's all that GMO crap.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, it isn't.
I had an orange the other day. It was the size of a softball.
Mm. Did it taste good?
Oh, it was awesome. Wow. I ended up getting three of them. I couldn't fit more than that in refrigerator.
We always get the cuties, the little clementines.
Oh, thank you, Eric.
Super small ones that peel nice and easily.
No, we get those too.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to me, Eric. one more link I'm going to throw out there. Raspberrypi.org, Magpie, essential books are now available on Amazon. Okay. Everyone should know Magpie. Magpie is the digital magazine that actually you might be able to get a physical copy of it too if you want. It's basically a magazine every month talking about Raspberry Pi related technologies, education about Raspberry Pi, and talking about success stories, what people have done with them, whether it be in school or shooting stuff up into space, which they literally did. There's four books, it looks like, available on Amazon. One is called Conquer the Command Line. One is called Make Games with Python. Then there is Experiment with the Sense Hat, which that's the book I think I might actually buy. And then there's Code Music with the Sonic Pi. Great resources, I will say that. Great books if you want to get into this and learn to it. And you are a quote-unquote reader. If you're the kind of person that likes to read, you know, then this is right up your alley. And they are available on android.co.uk. And when I come to amazon.com and I type it in, I do not see them there yet. Dang.
I wonder if they can teach you how to write the game Snake on Python.
Wouldn't shock me if that's one of them. Don't know. Very cool stuff. Any long-term listener to this network might know, I'm not a book guy. These still caught my eye. These are still really cool. And I'm really tempted, if my kid starts to show an interest, to literally buy these and just set them in his room and say, if you want to read, there's something you can read. And if you do read them, I'll buy you stuff.
Yeah. There you go. It seems like I had a physical copy of the first Magpie magazine for some reason, but I could be mistaken. It just seems like I had one. I have no idea if I did. If I did, I have no idea where it's at now. Maybe it
probably got blown off your porch.
That's true. I'll go look down there. You guys have anything else for tonight?
I think I'm pretty good.
I'm good. Mentally prepping for Northwest Linux Fest, hoping I have my Pi Top keyboard by then, because I would like to bring my Pi Top out to show people what a Odroid C2 in a laptop form factor looks like and acts like.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that I don't get stopped by security with the gadgets that I plan on bringing in my suitcase. It's just, you know, I've got a bunch of computers here. No, they don't have cases on them. They're just like green and digity, you know.
Might want to shave your beard before, you know.
I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to shave that. I mean, I'll keep it trimmed up. I'm not going to take it off, though. We're having our 150th anniversary of our town. I don't know if I mentioned this to you. Coming up next year. And one of the at the 100th and the 125th, they actually had a beard contest. And they had people go around and they'd fine you for not having a beard. I don't know. Some kind of weird thing. But the possibility that Wall Clipper might sponsor our beard contest for our 150th anniversary. So that's pretty cool. A lot of people who live here work at Wall Clipper Corporation, which is like, they make shavers.
Is that like Whale? Whale?
Whahl. Wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're based, that's what I meant. They're here. This is where their factory and headquarters is.
Well, that's cool. Then I've supported you in the past.
Yay. Well, they might support our beard contest. So I will shave it off if I have to start fresh, you know, because everybody, you know, you got to have like a starting line. So everybody would have to go bald to begin with. I'll shave off my beard for that. And then we'll see how long we can get it. It don't take long, man.
No, it doesn't take long to grow?
No.
Mine gets to a certain point and just stops.
I don't know. A 5 o'clock shadow, every 5 o'clock, it's there.
Yeah, mine grows to a certain point and then disappears because it becomes so aggravating, I have to get rid of it.
I think I like my beard more than my wife does.
Ditto.
If she told me to shave it off, I would, but...
Right.
I've never went without a mustache.
I haven't either. Since high school.
Yeah, there's a mole underneath mine somewhere I've never seen, you know, for years. I just remember pictures from when I was four.
Probably someone would say, what happened to your lip? It looks a little longer than it used to.
Very cool, guys. Well, I found me a SD card, and I'm going to be connecting it here and installing Armbian on it because I have to get it done.
Yeah. And my next project, I don't know, I think I'm going to switch gears from the Alexa on my Raspberry Pi because I really want to play with this this hard drive from Western Digital. I want to try that out. And I also want to get that screen going, the touch screen up going on.
Oh, yeah.
I'm still having fun with my PBX.
Oh, yeah.
Working up pretty good. I still haven't hooked it up to my Comcast phone service, but I've been doing a lot of call testing and a lot of analysis, looking at the RTP streams and SIP streams and so forth. So I'm learning a lot about voice communication, which is really cool. But I've been really knee-deep into Cisco documentation and Adtran stuff for voice. And I haven't been able to play around with any other Pis other than doing the PBX, which was, like I said, was really cool, and SIP phones. But I have a Ubuntu, like I said, Ubuntu Mate Pi just sitting and running. I was going to load, GNS3 on it and start playing with that, but I'm thinking if I should probably take it to the office and see if I can remote into it and do some wackadoodle stuff with it remotely. But I don't know. We'll figure that out. That's all I got.
All right. Do you want to end us off, Brian?
Yeah, so I was wondering, Eric, some of the folks know where they could find you, but the people that don't know, why don't you tell them where we can find you?
They could probably find me on Google Plus mostly, Eric Ardini. It's Ardui, almost like Arduino, and which is kind of weird because Ardini is like plural for Arduinos. So it's odd. Fitting podcast, I guess, for me to be on. Or eric@podnuts.com is a good email address if you get a message.
Nice. What about you, Dor?
Honestly, if you email me at mail@podnuts.com or doordoorgeek@gmail.com and you ask to be added to the Mattermost server, you'll be able to contact all of us and other people in the Podnuts verse, I'll say. And I want to thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for sending in emails. Long emails, short emails, it doesn't matter. Feedback is feedback. Communications is communications. We only know what we only know, and there are the girth of the listeners that we already have, I guarantee you know more than us. So keep emailing us and keep telling us stuff. Keep informing us and keep asking us questions. That's what makes this podcast thing go around.
Absolutely. It's like an endless cycle. I definitely appreciate that. And check out the Google Plus community site as well, too. Stop on by and post and check out the posts. Definitely love the feedback there as well, too. And you can find me there, Ask the Cable Guy, or at podnuts.com as well, too, as Dor has so eloquently stated. So I'd like to thank everyone, and I hope that today's podcast has been informative for everyone, and I'd like to thank you for viewing. Take care.